As usual, The Castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
Our castaway this week is a musician, a conductor whose whole professional life was devoted to one job. The ex-musical director of the Doyle-Card Opera Company, Isidore Godfrey. Mr. Godfrey, what would you want music to do for you on a desert island?
Well, I should say I want it to entertain me, keep me interested, and keep me amused as well. In other words, keep my mind occupied.
As a musician, would you rather have scores than records?
No, I don't think so. No, I'd rather have the records.
Did you find it difficult to choose your eight?
Yes, I did, because there are so many I'd love to have. But one by one, I've eliminated them. I mean, not enough just to enjoy them or like them. I had to have records I could really have over and over again and live with. And that's why I picked these eight, I think.
What's the first one?
Well, the first one is the Symphony in D Minor, the State of Frank.
Why do you choose that?
Well, I chose that because I heard it first at a prom concert when I was a student. It was under Sir Henry Wood many, many years ago, of course. And the passage I wanted to play is one I always remember. It sort of had a flash of light to me. I've always adored Frank ever since. And even when I was with the company, after I changed ready for performance, I'd hum to myself, you know, dee-pa-pom-pom-pom-pom-pom. And people say, oh, that's all right. It's humming his Frank, it would be a good show tonight.
Well, we're not using the Henry Wood recording. You've chosen a later one. Who's conducting on this record?
Oh, it's the Philadelphia Orchestra and Ormandy.
An excerpt from the first movement of César Franck's Symphony in D Minor, the Philadelphia Orchestra conducted by Eugene Ormandy. What's your second choice?
My second choice is A Poem of Ecstasy by Scriabin. And I want it particularly conducted by Svetlanov.
Mm-hmm.
Because, well, first of all, as a student, I was always very keen on the Russian school. I played a great deal of Scriabin. And I always felt a sort of an affinity for him. And just recently, I went to a concert at the Festival Hall and heard this work under Svetlanov, and it was absolutely terrific. He built it up to such a tremendous climax. You couldn't realize that a 40 chord could go on until everybody was almost out of their seats, and something I could always remember.
The closing passage of Scriabin's Poem of Ecstasy, the USSR Symphony Orchestra conducted by Svetlanov. You're a Londoner, aren't you?
I am, yes.
Musical family?
My father played the violin. My mother, she didn't play any instrument, but she was very dramatically inclined.
Did you show any exceptional musical talent as a child?
Well, I don't know if it was exceptional, but I did play the piano when I was about five.
Yes.
And also I had the great inclination to conduct it, like what all kids do. They roll a bit of paper and beat time with any banjo. But I always was very keen on becoming a conductor.
You started the Guildhall School of Music, and you did rather well then.
Yes. I got my associateship with the Gold Medal, and I also won the Chapel Scholarship. I think I was the first winner of that, and I several other things. And then it was decided by Sir Leonard Monroe, who was the principal, that we should have a conducting class.
Mm-hmm. At this time, you were all set for a career as a concert pianist.
Well, that was the idea. Mm. But somehow or other, I don't know what it was, whether I got stale, I had been too long with my professor, what it was. I didn't get on as well with the piano as I really should have done, I suppose. I had done one or two concerts. I had played down at Brighton with Lyle Taylor, who I don't suppose anybody remember now. But when this conducting class came up, I thought, well, this is it. This is what I wanted. Mm. And Julius Harrison was appointed as a teacher, and there were about a half dozen of us all told. Then during the second term, we all had a chance of conducting the school orchestra. And it was my good fortune that on the day that I conduct, and Sidney Harrison, who's a very well-known man about the BBC, of course, and also mm-hmm. as a professor of piano, played the piano for me, and he played part of the Grieg Concerto. And during that time, as I said, it was my good fortune, Sir Lenormand came in to see how the class was getting on. And although he said nothing at the time, a few days later he called me into his office and said there was a job going with the Doyle Scott Opera Company as assistant conductor and chorus master, and what did I think about it?
Had you at this time any particular affection for Gilbert and Sullivan?
Not really. I'd never seen the opera company. I had seen two of the operas performed at the Guildhall. That's all, I think.
But you said yes.
Definitely said yes. And then Sir Landon arranged an interview with Mr. Rupert Doyle-Cart. And that seemed to go off quite well, and then I watched the letterbox for days and days until the letter came through, and I got my job. I was appointed.
When did you conduct your first performance?
In the autumn of 1925. It was the Mikado.
And the last performance you did for the company?
The last performance was February 1968.
Nearly 44 years.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you joined as conductor of the second company. Quite soon you became musical director
Well, actually, in 1929, I became musical director.
So in 1929, you'd gone about as far as you could go.
Well, from position-wise, yes. But I just went on. I always enjoyed doing the shows. They never palled on me. I always thought the H Balls were the first one.
Splendid. Let's have record number three.
Well, that's just to go back to what I said before I joined the company. The Piano Concerto in A Minor, Grieg, by the Griff, who in my day played at almost every one of the promenade seasons. And also, the conductor is Sir Landon Ronald, who was much more my principal in those days.
The opening of the Grieg Piano Concerto, Arthur de Grieff with the Royal Albert Hall Orchestra, conducted by Sir Landon Ronald. Now, the Doyle-Cart has always been a touring company. It's never had a permanent home.
We've always called ourselves a touring company. Of course, we rather regard the Savoy Theatre London as our permanent home because it was built for the operas.
But you're never there.
Well, not recently. We have been there in the past. We did open the theatre.
Of course. And you kept going right through the war?
Oh, yes. We closed down when war broke out. I remember driving from, I think it was Bournemouth to Southsea, and the first thing I heard when the war broke and I wrote now was I got my petrol tank filled up up to the brim. But then, of course, we closed down. But we opened up again, I think it was Boxing Day, at Edinburgh, with a brand new Yeoman of the Guard, which, of course, could have gone on earlier. And, of course, we did lots of concerts at aerodromes, hospitals, all that factory, all that sort of thing. And, of course, we always felt that Hitler had our tour list, because wherever we went, He came too.
Yes. So you were virtually on tour non-stop for 44 years?
Pretty well, yes. Mm. Yes, I was.
Playing not only in this country, but in North America?
Yes, in Canada and in the United States.
How many times have you been across the United States?
Well, I've been over there 11 times, although the first time was Canada only. After that, it was always both.
Do you have a London season every year?
Well, more or less every other year.
How many operas are there in the usual repertoire?
Well, I should say 10. That includes Princess Ida, which we do occasionally.
And then there are a few rarities like The Sorcerer.
Well, The Sorcerer we last played in 1939. I'd like to see that revived, as I always used to enjoy that. And then, of course, Utopia and The Grand Duke had never been revived by the company, although they're played a lot by amateurs.
Yes. Well, you virtually devoted your musical life to one composer. You must know very well how Sullivan's mind worked. Did you ever find yourself getting obsessed by him? Have you done any research into his life?
I've done a lot of reading on his life, yes. But the more I admire Sullivan, the more I admire Gilbert. I'm a great Gilbert enthusiast, but I think after all he did write the libretti, and he was a very fine lyric writer. At the same time, I do feel that Sullivan set his words so well. I mean, they make the English language sound musical. And rhythmically, I think that maybe if he'd lived, he would have restored some of the words and that sort of thing. I don't know. But they were a wonderful combination.
Let's have record number four.
Well, number four, The Omen of the God, which is probably one of my favourites. Some of the old principles that we had some years ago. And I like the quartet, When a Word Goes A-Wooing, from Act Two.
Goes A-Wooing from Act Two of The Omen of the God. Now, a few years ago, the operas came out of copyright, which meant that anybody could put them on. And the doily cart monopoly was broken. What difference did this make?
Really, it made very little difference. In fact, if it made any difference at all, it made the operas more popular, because other companies were able to do them, and then they suddenly realised, their fans suddenly realised there was such a company as the doily cart. And when they ceased to do them, they came to see us. They saw notices of our records in their programmes, and I think it's done nothing but good.
Who have been the great personalities of the company during your day?
Well, it was when I joined, there was Henry Lytton, Bertha Lewis, Leo Sheffield, Winifred Lawson, Elton Griffin, any number of them. And I found them awfully easy, even in my green state, get on with them. They got on awfully well with me.
I don't suppose anyone has anything like equaled your record, but do artists stay with the company a long time?
Some do, yes, but perhaps on the whole not as long as they used to. That applies to the Corvs too. They feel now there's always that urge to move on to other things.
Let's have record number five.
Now, number five, I'd like to have The Slow Movement of the Violin Concerto of Elgar. This is a concerto which has always been very dear to me, because I worked at this concerto with William Primrose, who everyone knows is a very fine viola player, but in my day, when we were students together, he was a violinist, and we learnt this concerto together, and ever since then, of course, I think it's a wonderful work.
the beginning of the slow movement of Elgar's violin concerto, with the composer conducting and Yehudi Menuhin as soloist. Let's have record number 6 now.
Well, number 6, I'd like to have Sir Roderick's song from Ruddy Door.
When the night wife howls in the chimney cows, and the bats in the moonlight climbs, and the clouds like funeral sprouts sail over the midnight sky. When the footpads quail and the night birds wail, and black dogs bay at the moon, then is the speaker's holiday. There is the ghost I knew.
Donald Adams singing Sir Roderick's song from Ruddigore. Mr. Godfrey, what would be your mental approach to loneliness?
Well, I don't mind being on my own for a little time, but for anything that I think I'd hate it. Having travelled about so much, you know, being on tour, packing and unpacking, I've come to rely upon my wife and other people to do so much for me. I think I'd be completely hopeless and helpless.
I usually find that musicians are pretty hopeless with their hands. This applies to you?
Pretty well, yes. I'm all right with electrical things. I can fiddle about with plugs and things, but anything to do with... I won't envy other people who can do things, but never do it myself.
I can't think of anything more useless on a desert island than being handy with electrical things. Are you any good at gardening or cultivating?
Not really, but my wife does the garden. I just fill the bird bath, and there probably wouldn't be a bird bath there.
Would you try to escape?
I think I'd have to before I starve to death.
Yes. Any good with boats, small craft?
Well, I don't know. I'm just hoping that whatever I came on, I could put to use on the island and probably get away on too. I don't know.
All right. Let's get on to record number 7.
Number 7 is the Symphony in C Major of Schubert, the slow movement, and I should like Barbara Wallach conducting it. Some years ago, I went to hear one of his concerts, and they said, oh, go around and see Barbara, and I was too shy, I didn't. But I wrote him a little note, and he was so kind, he wrote me a charming letter back and said, you must come out any time and see me, and I've always been very thrilled, and I always have done there. And also, the oboe solo, it was the Halle Orchestra, was played by, I presume, Philip Hill, was my oboe player for quite a long, long time, so I had that personal contact.
The opening of the slow movement of Schubert's C Major Symphony, Sir John Barbirolli conducting the Halle Orchestra. And now, your last record.
Well, for my last record, I'd like to have the chorus singing Hail Poetry from Act One, Pirates of Penzance. I always feel the chorus such an important part of the opera. In fact, J.M. Gordon, who was the producer of the company before the war, always called them the backbone of the operas, and I feel that I should like to have something sung by them. Also, rather turns full circle, but I can go back to 1927, that he was, when we were in Canada, and outside Calgary, we met the Sarsi Indians on the prairie, and we sang Hail Poetry to them. I don't think they knew what it was all about, but we enjoyed it.
Hail Poetry from The Pirates of Penzance. If you could take only one disc of the eight that you played us, which would it be?
I think I'd take the set of flat.
Yes. And one luxury to take with you?
Well, I'm just wondering if you've had so many castaways who've suddenly left a piano behind.
No, the island is inspected every week, but we can have one put on for you. Some well, smart, uniformed BBC chaps.
Oh, jolly good. And would I have a seat with it, too?
A stool, yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes. That would keep me off the wet sand. Be fine.
And one book apart from the Bible and Shakespeare.
Well, now, would it be possible if we have a book of full scores?
Yes.
Well, that'd be awfully good idea. I have some records and I have, some scores of the Tchaikovsky symphonies. That'd be wonderful.
So you'll be, when you come back, you'll be all ready to start another career.
That would be marvellous.
Well, thank you, Isidore Godfrey, for letting us hear your Desert Island Disc.
Delighted. Thank you very much.
Goodbye, everyone.
The guest in today's program was Isidore Godfrey. The interviewer was Roy Plumley, and the producer, Ronald Cook.